Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Right Stream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @RightStream and hashtag #RightStream. Thanks for listening to the Right Stream Radio Network.
Hello, everyone, from the beautiful Space Coast of Florida here on the Central East Coast. Great to have you here for another Right Stream Tuesday broadcast. This, of course, is Daria Ann, your Right Stream Tuesday host and founder of the Right Stream Radio Network here on Blog Talk Radio. You can find out more about all of our excellent hosts and programs by visiting our website, rightstreamradio.com, and that's W-R-I-T-E, S like Sam, T like Tom, R-E-A-M, radio.com. So we're rejoicing here in the flow of creativity. And if you go to that website, rightstreamradio.com, you can learn more about our hosts, Lisa Tarvez, John D. Gresham, Dr. Billy Eisenberg, Sheena Benjamin-Wise, and me. And if you want to learn more, even more about me, you can visit me at my blog, dariadigiovanni.com. That's dariadigiovanni.com. Aside from ghostwriting and editing books, I also provide social media services for a variety of clients, including small businesses, authors, and individuals. I can do social media training, everything from setting up blogs, in the case of an author, editing, ghostwriting, guiding them through the independent publishing process, connecting them with a great book cover designer, basically everything they need to navigate through the independent publishing process. I learned from my experiences in 2008, and it's been my pleasure to be able to offer these services to other authors, especially if you're new to the whole independent publishing process and are kind of like I was, a little bit intimidated by it, although I sort of plowed my way through and learned through trial and error. But you can also find references and testimonials about my work at my site. And again, I'll just ask you to visit me there at dariadigiovanni.com. If you want to contact me, there is a contact page there, and you can just fill that out, and it will go directly to my email, and I will reply to you as quickly as I can. Just FYI, before we get to today's wonderful guest, my latest book release, I just want to let you guys know about it. It's coming up in September, just in time for Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month. Now, I have to tell you, this is something completely different from any project I've ever worked on before. And I have to say, I've been really blessed because every project I've worked on in terms of books, each one has been unique and an opportunity for me to learn something new. And that's certainly true of A Snobby Girl's Guide to Dealing with Cancer. But this has a very, very specific target audience, and it's written by Maureen Bucci, who is herself a cancer survivor. And in the process of going through treatment and recovery, Maureen used journaling to really kind of help her mentally and spiritually just cope with what was going on. And through that process, she really developed some great coping skills, kind of like ways to shift the mindset for other cancer patients. And the result was a book that she put together that I've had the pleasure of editing. And, of course, with Maureen, I'm also helping her with all of her social media sites and blogging and promoting, A Snobby Girl's Guide to Dealing with Cancer. So be on the lookout for that. The timing is perfect. We didn't plan it this way, but next month, September, is Ovarian Cancer Awareness, and it just coincides perfectly. So that's coming up. So, please look for that. And for right now, again, at my blog, you can find a little bit of information about Maureen and her book, and we will have her blog up and running shortly. Okay, on to today's fascinating guest, author David Adelson. I am just so thrilled to have him on the show today. He is the author of the book, Awaken to Who You Are, and he just has a fascinating background. And as my listeners know, and anybody who follows me on Twitter, I have a variety of interests that seem to be, seem to have nothing to do with the other. And I just love that. I love learning about things that really kind of challenge the mind and challenge your belief system and instigate growth, inspire growth, I should say, personal growth and spiritual growth. And so when David Adelson got in touch with me, or his representative got in touch with me to to inquire about being on the show today. I thought, hey, absolutely, can't wait. Let's bring it on. So I'm just really thrilled to have him here today, and I'm going to bring him on the air here momentarily. But I just want to kind of read a couple of bullet points about his book, Awaken to Who You Are, and then when David comes on, we'll certainly get into some of the specific concepts that he deals with in the book, as well as learn more about him and his background. But I would like him to be able to share that with all of you in his own words. So in his book, Awaken to Who You Are, David Adelson brings over 40 years of spiritual research and experience. Bliss, happiness, health, and wholeness grows in and around as you read it. The book has over 140 pictures, and it's only 170 pages, so it's quick and easy to read. And he recommends reading it daily for maximum growth. And, you know, one of the things I have to say, too, I'll just interject here, is that the book is also humorous. David takes, you know, these are really deep concepts, but what I appreciated most about Awaken to Who You Are is that David really injects a lot of humor into it, which makes it a lot of fun to read. Awaken to Who You Are gives you intellectual knowledge and much more. Each reading actually awakens you to every concept presented and its direct experience. Advanced meditators, beginners, and anyone in between will benefit from continued readings. Each reading deepens your wisdom and experience. With more than 140 incredible illustrations, Awaken to Who You Are presents the most complete, profound, and deepest understandings yet presented on Earth. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I bring on to RightStream Tuesday author David Adelson. Hey, David.
Hi, how are we doing? Thank you so much for having me. That was a delightful introduction. I hope I can live up to it.
Ken, and thank you. But David, let's start, because you have such an interesting background, and I want to give you an opportunity to introduce yourself to the audience before we talk about Awaken to Who You Are.
Okay. What do you want to know?
Well, tell the story about the psychic and your grandmother. I love that. You could start with that, because I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, it's, the story's, you know, that's the introduction or the preface or whatever it is to the book, but my grandmother, so we're talking, this is in the late 40s and 50s or whatever, small town in Massachusetts, and there was a psychic woman there, and back then I don't think she advertised psychic, she just had some small little apartment above a shoe store or something in some small town. And my grandmother went to her, and the woman would just have tea with you. And during the course of the conversation, they talk about the weather, and then she dropped these bombshells about, you know, things yet to come or things from the past. And my grandmother went, and the woman said that her daughter, meaning my mother, was pregnant, which my mother was at the time, and that this person would do, you know, amazing things or whatever. But she got it wrong, because that was actually my older sister, who indeed does do amazing things. But there were certain things that were right and certain things that were wrong, but she said it would be a son. So then my mother, after my sister was born, went to see this woman without telling her she was related to my grandmother. And the woman corrected herself and said, yeah, and you're going to have another daughter too, but there's going to be a son, and he's going to do amazing things for the world. So I grew up Jewish in Massachusetts. My mother was, 100% Italian. So I got guilt from both sides. And from day one, they kept telling me, you have to do great things. You have to do great things. And by the time I was 20, I was pretty neurotic about it, because, you know, I didn't know what I was supposed to do. What does this mean? You know, do you enter politics? Do you, I mean, where do you go with that? But I was very fortunate in that, my mother had some abilities that she never understood. At one time, the phone rang at like 6 in the morning one time, and before she even got up out of bed, she said, oh, that's so-and-so calling to tell us that a particular uncle had died. And she was right, but the interesting thing was is he had not been sick, so there was no reason for her to think that's what it was. And so she had experiences that she didn't know what to do with, And then my sisters and I, particularly my younger sister and I, also started having these kinds of things growing up, and they were just part of who we were. We didn't know what to do with it. I was stunned when I learned in high school that other people didn't see these things. I thought they were normal. It was natural. And then 20 years, however many years ago, I had been practicing transcendental meditation for decades at that point, and my son got very ill. And all of a sudden, all these, you know, heaven opened up. I just started having all these incredible experiences, and they have stayed with me since. And I feel very blessed that I'm able to share what I've learned with these products that I develop. They're all at giftsfromdevotion.com. We've created these incredible DVDs and CDs and artwork and many things that just help awaken bliss, joy, happiness. They shift the energies to the people who look at them. And the book is one of the things that, and I gather you've enjoyed reading it. So does that answer your question?
Absolutely. That was great. Perfectly. David, I want to just go back and let's define for anyone who doesn't know, because I think a lot of people are familiar with the term, but they may not know what transcendental meditation really means. Can you define that for us?
Transcendental meditation is a specific meditation technique. Most people are familiar with it because Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who is the founder of transcendental meditation, back in the, I guess it was the 60s, the Beatles, Donovan, Mia Farrow, all kinds of very famous people learned TM. These days, the David Lynch Foundation, Director David Lynch of Twin Peaks and I think Eraserhead, all kinds of very famous. He has a foundation now, then, and he's had concerts and things to raise money for underprivileged or at-risk children, for veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder to learn the TM technique. And he's had Paul McCartney and Jerry Seinfeld and Russell Brand and just dozens and dozens of famous actors and actresses and people support these things. The TM technique is just a simple, natural technique. You don't have to believe anything to be able to do it. It's universal. It doesn't matter what religion or background you are. You don't have to sit in any awkward position or learn yoga. It's just a very simple mental technique, 15, 20 minutes twice a day, and it completely can turn everything around in your life. It just allows the mind to settle down to the source of thought deep within. The body gets a rest that's, I think, something like 8 times deeper than sleep, completely awake inside, mental clarity, and 300, 400, 500, 600 published research papers on it. It's the most well-documented self-development program on the planet. Huge, and recommended by many people. So that's a little bit about TM. Anyone who's interested, tm.org can tell you what you need to know. So.
Well, and you can also find out a little bit about it in your book, Awaken to Who You Are. And David, I just want to mention also, I could go back even further in time to one of my favorite American writers, Ralph Waldo Emerson. Among many things, he wrote the famous essay Self-Reliance, and he was into transcendental meditation. I don't know if a lot of people know that, but I always was fascinated by that. I was an English major in college, and so when studying him and that came up, I think that was kind of when I first started to become aware of a lot of these things. So you're saying that really you can it only takes 15 minutes a day, and if you practice this on a daily basis, you can really change your life?
It's 15 to 20 minutes twice a day. You do it morning and evening. It's a very deep state of rest, and it brings mental clarity in the morning. And then, 5 o'clock at the end of the day, we're starting to feel some fatigue coming on, and you do it again, and then it just brightens you up for the evening so you can have a much fuller and happier evening. And that's it. And it's interesting that you mentioned Ralph Waldo Emerson. one of the things that came as an offshoot of transcendental meditation, and I mentioned this in the book, is Maharishi University of Management. And the executive vice president there, his name is Craig Pearson, he's a PhD, and he has just come out with a book that describes exactly what you're talking, not only Ralph Waldo Emerson, but William Wordsworth and dozens and dozens of great writers and people who have described this very experience, which is a natural experience throughout time. And he goes through all this different literature, and he shows where they're talking about this process of transcending and what and how they're describing it. And it's a fabulous book. I don't know the name of it offhand, but it's just doing that very thing where you look and see that this is not something new. This is not something that Maharishi just made up out of the blue. It's Lord Christ talked about the kingdom of heaven within. He's talking about that same source that one experiences when they practice the TM technique. All the different true teachings of the planet all have this at their basis because it's reality. And now modern science is coming out with unified field theory, which is the same thing. And we talk about it in the book in terms of the term infinity. The very first chapter just shows that, and if you'd like, I can just explain that to your audience right now.
Oh, please do, David. Absolutely.
Okay, so this is one of the fun things, and I'm glad that you enjoy the humor because it's meant to be fun. It turns out the book is actually only 77 pages when we formatted it 8.5 by 11, so it's a real quick read. There's 140, 150, 160 pictures. We kept adding more. We stopped counting. And it's just to take you in a very simple way so that you can grasp and experience and live the concepts without studying for hours and hours. There's an old expression that says knowledge in the book stays in the books, and we didn't want that. We wanted it to become part of something that you just carry with you. So the first chapter is called How Big is Infinity? And we begin with the idea that infinity is actually really big, and there's some figure about the size of the universe and all that. And there's pictures for all of this, and I'm sorry that your audience can't see it. But I did want to mention that we loved being on your show. We wanted to offer something special to your audience. And so the first 50 people who go to our website can download the ebook completely for free. And they should just go to giftsfromdevotion.com/Daria. And that'll take them to a page. They just register and they can get the book immediately and they can enjoy it. And those who do it immediately can read along with me. I don't have it in front of me, but they can do it. So it's giftsfromdevotion.com/Daria. And the first 50 people can get a copy of the $5.99 ebook for free. So we
wanted to do
that for your audience. So, and I hope they enjoy that. And so the first chapter, How Big is Infinity? We just start off by saying, you know, one of the interesting things that science tells us is that the universe is expanding. And people do not have trouble with that. You know, whether we believe in the Big Bang or not, it doesn't matter. It's just expanding. And for those I just want to mention, for those people who seem to have trouble with evolution or the phrase because of their, religious beliefs, I just suggest that they change the word evolution to the word change. Evolution is just another word for change. Things are always changing, and we live that in our own lives. No matter what, nothing stays the same. You know, we get a new pair of shoes, they don't stay new. You know, we wear them, something gets built on them. So change happens. So it's not a big threat. It's part of the structure. When God created it, he didn't want it to be static. So he put in motion change. So, you know, modern science talks about the universe expanding, Big Bang or not, we don't care. But the universe is expanding. So if it's expanding, what is it expanding into? And the simple thing is it's expanding into infinity. And I found over the years that when I explain that to people, nobody bats an eyelash. It's expanding into infinity. Oh, okay, it's expanding into infinity. But here's the interesting thing, Daria. Infinity, by definition, has no beginning and it has no end. Would you agree?
I agree, yes.
Okay. If it has no beginning and it has no end, then if we look at the edge of the universe where it's expanding or contracting or whatever it's doing in relation to infinity, it's moving out into infinity, but infinity does not begin there. It can't begin there because if it begins there, it's not infinite. It's just a big space somewhere. Which means that at the edge of the universe where infinity is, infinity actually must go and underlie the universe itself for it to be infinity. And people have already agreed that it's expanding into infinity, so they understand the concept. And so that means that if it is expanding into infinity, and there's all kinds of mathematical games about how big is infinity, and this is not in the book, but they talk about how one infinity is bigger than another. But the truth is, that's just mathematician games. They use the example that if you take the group, the set of all whole numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that's infinite because you can always add 1. But they say that that's a bigger infinity than if you just take a set of all the even numbers, which is 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, like that, because obviously the first one has more numbers than the second, even though you can keep adding to it. And that's just, you know, mental games, the gymnastics that these mathematicians like to play. But in reality, infinity is infinity. It's however big it is, it includes everything. So if infinity doesn't begin at the edge of the universe, then it must underlie the universe, which means it underlies the sun, it underlies the earth, it underlies the continent we're on, it underlies the country of the United States, it underlies, you know, the state that you're in. And we do this sequentially through pictures in the book, as you've seen, and it underlies the house and the living room and you. Now, if infinity underlies you, and by the way, the TM technique, Transcendental Meditation, is just a way of establishing and experience that infinity within you. If infinity is within you, infinity has huge power, huge creativity, wouldn't you like to be using it in your life? Wouldn't you like to take advantage of that? And that's the end of the first chapter. Yeah, wouldn't we all? You know, given the possibility, who wouldn't want it? You know, it's like you could have the keys to the treasury. Would you like it? Yes or no? Well, yeah. Of course. Absolutely, we want that. So that's some of the things. And then the book, and again, giftsfromdevotion.com/Daria. Your people can go and, you know, your listeners can go and download a free copy. Do it today. We'll only leave that up for like a week or so or something, but they should do it soon. But the book, then we get into other things about who you are and your relationship to your body, your relationship to God. It's a fun read. It's a quick read. We show you where the blocks are, and we cover some very simple solutions, including TM, but there's other things that we list as how to get rid of the blocks to enjoying infinity in your life. So that's what the book is about.
David, I have a couple of questions, but one that comes to mind, because I mentioned, you know, in my intro today that I'm working on a book for someone who is a cancer survivor. Can you speak to the phenomenon of, you know, when we come down with some kind of physical illness or problem, that it really originates in the non-physical first? Because I've learned that through lots of classes I've taken and metaphysical books that I've read. So I want to hear your take on that and how your book can help with that.
Oh, good. So this is an excellent question. Thank you for asking it. What we talk about in the book, and actually there's a video that we have that's not quite on the website. It's about a 15-minute video that people can watch that actually shows this very graphically. Again, we like things to be very simple and to go deep when people watch it. And so there's a video that's coming out. It should be up sometime later this week, I believe. It's a YouTube thing, but it's you can have what you want if you understand this. And it talks about the very basic principle. We've just described that infinity, and science can call it unified field, and Lord Christ can call it the kingdom of heaven within, and in India they may call it samadhi or Satchitananda or pure consciousness, or there's a number of different terms from the different traditions in the world, and they're all good. They all describe this same source that doesn't have the different qualities in it, but it has the potential for the different qualities in it. And somehow that source comes to be what we experience now. And we do have a video that we did just come out with last week, which is called The Miracle of Pain, Suffering, and Ignorance. And it's a YouTube video. People can look it up. Should be under Gifts from Devotion is our channel, or just David Adelson, A-D-E-L-S-O-N. And you watch this, and it talks about, it's amazing that you're bringing up this question of cancer or disease, because what's staggering is that it can happen. What's staggering is that infinity that has within it all possibilities and purity, and the Sanskrit term is sattva, it just has everything good in it. How can disease occur? And there's one of the chapters of the book that describes the one way of describing the sequence of manifestation of expression, and we know dozens of different ways. It depends on you know, different people's backgrounds and their traditions. But what happens is you start with silence, and then something happens, something changes, some vibrations start occurring, and they become some interaction within unboundedness, within infinity, starts happening that eventually becomes convoluted enough that it as if falls into manifest creation. Now, here's one of the interesting things, again, we do talk about this in the book, is that from our side, we look at it and we describe it as infinity is there and I'm here because I'm not living it. But that's a game from infinity's side, or from God's side, you're already one. God does not see you as separate from himself, although you do. And that's the whole point of the miracle of pain and suffering, is how can something as unlimited as infinity become so estranged from itself, within itself, that you experience pain, suffering, any of these diseases? And so what we find is that the cause of cancer or a sore throat or whatever has to do with, as these impulses start moving around in infinity and they start interacting with each other and start expressing themselves and they become cruder, more convoluted, more integrating, that something falls out of place. And on the level of frequencies, some frequency is mismanaged. Something happens. We've heard of, you know, in high school or junior high, you know, the DNA, RNA replication, and it's this process that's going on in your body all the time, whereby something at the level of DNA is being replicated incredibly quickly, and sometimes there's some mutation about it. Mutation means something went a little bit wrong, and there's this whole fruit fly experiment that I remember my older sister did back in junior high, because fruit flies like have about a 90-second lifespan. And you could see blue eyes or green eyes. I have no idea what it was, but it was something that you could see happen very quickly. And in the process of these frequencies, some error occurs, and that causes some discomfort to be experienced. And one of the things that we do with our work is we've created products that reset those frequencies at the level of frequency to eliminate the manifestation of disease. Anytime someone experiences something on the surface, whether it's a wart or cancer or even a bruise, something underlying happened first, and something underlying that happened before that. And the farther back you can go, the more quickly and effectively you can eliminate what's coming. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yes, it sure does. And my next question was, and I think you were alluding to that, does it matter at which stage the person might be? Can they, in other words, can this technique, if they start using it, help reverse if they're already far along with, you know, let's say something serious like cancer? Can it help reverse, or do you need to catch it before it even happens.
Okay. There's different things that we're talking about here, Daria, and I just want to keep them separate because I don't want anybody to be confused. Okay, one of the things that we talked about was TM and its healing abilities as far as dissolving stress. And anyone who is sick who is practicing the TM technique will gain some benefits because anytime you're sick, one of the first things the doctor tells you is get plenty of rest. And TM has very, very deep rest associated with it, which the research has shown. But it's not a healing technique in and of itself. They never purport that if you have any particular localized disease of any kind that TM will cure it, although if it is stress-related, by reducing the stress, many people experience, relief. And it certainly changes the psychology for anything that you're going through if it gives you great inner strength and the ability to handle it better. So that's the TM side. Now, on the other side, if we're talking about frequencies and fixing something, and I just want to, keep them separate, wherever you are is how far along it is going to determine how fixable it is. Now, there are stories, there's John of God and there's these other healers that are famous throughout the world, Lord Christ rose people from the dead. So there are all kinds of amazing things that certain people with certain gifts can do. That's far beyond anything that I or anyone I know is capable of. But people do have spontaneous remissions, and there are different things that can happen regardless of how far along it is. There's a woman called Anita Moorjani, Moorjana, just wrote a book a couple years ago called Dying to Be Me, and she talks about how she actually died of cancer. And then while she was having this, they call it near-death experience to me, it's after death or whatever, she saw what was causing the cancer, which was the way that she perceived herself. When they revived her in a very short time, in just a few weeks, she got rid of the cancer. So when we talk about, you're talking about this friend who maybe has some advanced stage of the disease or it being discovered, there's always something that you can do. But if the leg has been amputated, growing back the leg is not normal for our species, although starfish apparently do it. So, catching it early on is obviously easier, and catching it before it even begins to manifest, catching in the case of the thought patterns or the way we think about things, if we can shift that, then that can help eliminate the experience of the discomfort in the first place. And I just want to mention from the work that I've been doing for all these years is that, and the divine guidance that I've been graced to receive, a lot of people get cancer. On the one hand, one hears about the pollution and the food and the GMOs and the pesticides and the this and the that or the stressful life we're living. But the truth is that a resilient person, that's not going to matter to. But that a lot of people are getting cancer because they find the world very harsh, and that's the way that they're creating an escape. It's just a way out. And then they get the disease, and then they fight the disease however they do because they decide they want to stay or whatever happens. But cancer at its deepest level is caused by a belief in oneself that is wrong. They're not worthy, they shouldn't be here, the world is overwhelming, some such something. And it's wrong. Whatever it is, it's wrong because cancer in and of itself is a disease that expresses wrongness. Does that make sense?
Very much so. And thank you for making those distinctions, David. And no, I totally understand that.
Go ahead.
So it sounds like, and this is what I've learned, through Unity Church and many of the classes I've taken and Louise Hay and various authors, that really what we want to do is we want to be proactive and develop the right mindsets and the right practices such as TM to prevent these things from ever happening. Would you say that's
exactly
true? Okay.
Exactly. And, you know, you mentioned Louise Hay and Unity and all these people, and they all have it right. I mean, Napoleon Hill, who wrote Think and Grow Rich, all of these people who mention that your thinking itself is significant. They may even use the term it's all powerful. It determines things. Are accurate, and yet they're not. And I want to talk about this. They're accurate in that how we think about ourselves and the self-talk that goes on and everything, it's crucial to the life that we lead. It's absolutely crucial. But we've all been brought up with the you're not good. I mean, whatever it is, you're not good enough, or who do you think you are, no, you don't do it that way, you do it this way, you don't know what you're talking about. I mean, all of these things, you know, in school we're taught, you know, no, you can't go to the bathroom unless you raise your hand. You can't do what's natural to you. You don't count. I mean, basically, the whole thing about not being able to go to the bathroom is basically saying, look, you don't count. It's what I say. It's what someone outside of you says that gives you the right to do something as natural as, you know, the eating. You know, who wants to... what kid wants to sit in a school for, you know, at age five, sit in a school for 8 hours? Come on, that's torture. I mean, really, it's like putting leg shackles on them. And then when they want to move around, we drug them. We say, oh, no, that's, you can't, I mean, come on, that's ridiculous. So people are taught early on that not to think highly of themselves, not to expect the best. And right there, that's a cause for, what, 90% of the disease that we experience in the world right now. I mean, it's huge, you know. And not all cultures do that, fortunately, but you can look at some of these, you know, Aboriginal cultures that have a completely different attitude, and their health is very, very different. Their whole philosophy is quite amazing. So the idea of what we think being crucial is crucial. But now here's the interesting thing, and you brought up, you know, in terms of averting the danger, learning TM and stuff, one of the things that we bring up in the book in Awaken to Who You Are is the idea that it's not simply the thought, but it's the power of the thought. How strong are your thoughts? If you are a weak person, and weak means inability to fulfill your desires, it means that you have a desire, but for some reason, everything appears to conspire against you. That just means you're weak. It just means you don't have the fortitude, the wherewithal to get through. But a person with strong thought force, they just think and go, and obstacles move out of the way. You know, I don't know if you've ever had the experience of driving down the highway when you're in a hurry, and you certainly wouldn't be speeding, I know that, but you're driving down the highway in a hurry and some slow car gets in front of you, and sometimes the experience is there's nothing you can do. You're just stuck there. And sometimes the experience is the car moves. All of a sudden, this car that you thought was going to be there for miles in front of you and slowing you down and going to make you late, all of a sudden it's gone. And the difference is, I mean, we're not going to get into the whole idea of karma in this situation, and, you know, but what we're talking about here is, you know, in reactions from some past whatever, but just talking about thought force, that ability to have the car disappear, the ability to have the disease disappear is two things. It's having the right thought, but it's also having the power of strength to bring it to fruition, to bring it to fruition. And I just want to mention this here because this idea of fulfilling our desires is a big one, and I've been getting guidance lately with some interesting figures. And what I was told by Divine Mother was the Mother of God, whatever that works in whatever tradition you have, and this is that connection that woke up decades ago, was she said that 99% of the people on the planet do not know how to desire something in the way that they get it. And I'll give you an example. Somebody can have the desire for orange juice, and then 2 days later they're looking through People magazine or something, and they see an ad for frozen concentrate. Well, there's their orange juice. That's the fulfillment of their desire. But you can see that that's not what they meant. Right?
Right.
Okay. And so she said 99% of the people don't know how to desire, because we're not taught, how to desire in a way so that you actually experience and get what you want. And she said, but not only that, it's not worse, but it contributes is that 50% of the people don't know how to receive it even when it's given to them. They'll just walk away from it. They'll go, oh, not me, not now, I'm not ready. Zig Ziglar, I don't know if you know him, great motivational speaker.
Love Zig Ziglar.
Love him. He tells it. There's so many great lessons that I learned from him years ago. Don't confuse activity with accomplishment is one of them that I use all the time in my own work. It's just brilliant, man. And he tells the story when he was, before he became who he is now, he was selling pots and pans. That's what he did, effectively door to door. And he said he was so bad at it. And he was. He really was pathetic at it. He was so bad at it that one day he gave a presentation to two women, and they said, okay, we'll take it. And he said, get this, he said, sorry, but I can't take your order. I have another appointment to give another presentation to. And he left.
Oh, no.
And he actually, talk about inability to receive, show up to the other appointment. Just totally missing the concept, So, and then he did go back later and they did still buy from him, but that's ludicrous. But that idea of, so many people don't know how to receive. And I've seen some videotapes, YouTube tapes of homeless people, and somebody will go up and give them $5 and then, or $10 or something. And then somebody else will go up a couple minutes later and ask them for change, and they'll give what they just got. And on one hand, the people are presenting and saying, see, homeless people, they're, the people who have very little are very generous, and they may be. And in some cases, they are just being generous, but in some cases, they actually don't know how to receive that money. They just don't. So the opportunity to give it away is a great relief to them because they don't value themselves enough to accept that. And
very interesting.
I want to point out one more thing about the homeless, because there's a book called Embraced by the Light, which came out, I think, in the 80s. And it was one of the first people who had this experience where she was in the hospital and she technically died and had some experience and then. Came back or whatever, and she and I don't remember her name. I'm sorry. The book is Embraced by the Light, and she talks about how during the time that she was out of the body, that she's being guided by three divine beings. Don't know if they're angels or whatever they are. And she said at one point they take her to this alcoholic, drunken person, the homeless person. And they say to her, what do you think of this guy? And she does what we all do. She just starts to condemn him and, could have had a better life and everything. And they say, no, no, no. And they get all excited and they say, this being is actually a very great soul who is making this sacrifice to help a friend. This is what he's doing to help a friend. And Divine Mother has since told me, and this is not going to be true for everybody by any stretch of the imagination. There are people whose, past actions have led them to be in this, in what we would define as a story state. But Divine Mother has said there are some beings who have been in horrendous situations, what we might call intense battles, the war in Afghanistan, some of these people come back with very intense post-traumatic stress disorder, and that happens to the divine beings as well. And she says, and some of them just want a lifetime of no responsibilities, of just recuperation time, and they are born in a situation where very quickly they become, drug addicts that are homeless, that have no responsibility. And she said for some of these people, basically, that's their hospital stay. So we look at homeless people and we normally think, and this is, granted, this is few and far between, but it does start to give you a different perspective, because when we talk about what thought creates, and anyone can overcome their past karma if they have the right power of thought. Anyone can. So if you look at people who, through circumstances that maybe they say it's the economy or they lost their job or any number of things, if you look at somebody who is homeless, they have created that situation, and they can, if they can get it together, move out of that situation. And you see people move out of that situation because you see them on the Ellen DeGeneres show where somebody was homeless and now they're going to college. They've managed to turn it around. So we sympathize with people. We wish them well. We really want to support everyone to find the fulfillment that they want to find. But some people choose to be sick. Do you understand how that can happen?
Yes. Yeah, so, David, it sounds to me like you're talking about a soul before incarnating again on Earth chooses their life situation. Is that what, you know, is this tied in with reincarnation and the soul progression?
Well, some cases, sure. But let's make sense. The whole thing with life, you know, I was growing up and I was, you know, taught, I was brought up Jewish, but, you know, my mother's side of the family was all Catholic. You know, Roman Catholic. And so I was presented with those growing up. And one of the things that I could never reconcile, was how young children are born diseased or deformed, because I could that never made sense to me about how God would allow that, because God is huge. I mean, there is no greater benevolence than the creator. None. I mean, it's absolutely huge. So how could that be? And then somewhere along the way, in my 20s, I came across, actually, I think it was in Maharishi's book, The Science of Being and Art of Living, he talked about two concepts, which were karma, that what you do comes back to you, and, you know, using the term Lord Christ used. And then he talked about reincarnation, that this is not the be-all and end-all. The fact that we don't remember what our life was before here does not negate that there was one. Edgar Cayce, for instance, said, you know, when children are 3 or 4 and they ask where I came from, he said, that's the time to ask them, to say, I don't know, what do you remember from before you were here? Which I thought was a very interesting thing. And when my son was born, again, it was after all these experiences had started opening up. When my son was born, I had all these visions for the first 3 days he was around. And he was this little kid. I mean, you know, under 5 pounds or something. This is a very small body. And I had all these visions of him as this huge warrior in ancient Greece, in the Mediterranean Sea, sailing a ship. And I don't know where it was, but he was dark-skinned and in a jungle situation with a huge shield and a spear, and on and on and on, and all this huge amount of stuff from him. And I have to tell you, I kind of freaked out. I was like, oh my God, how am I going to handle this kid? How can I be a father to somebody like this? And then within 3 days, it just became very apparent that there was nowhere in that small 4-pound, 8-ounce or whatever it was, nervous system to store all that information. And it just faded. It just faded. So, you know, to me, the universe makes sense with these two laws, what you sow, you reap, and that everything continues. So to me, that made sense, but some people may not appreciate that, but that's fine. But just to tie in with this, when some people choose to be homeless after they get here, it's not necessarily predetermined before we get in. And the big issue is anybody can turn, with enough power of strength, with enough power of mind, can turn around the situation that they're in. Anybody. I don't care what the situation is. And that's what we're here to help do. That's what the whole giftsfromdevotion.com, all of the DVDs that increase love or health or happiness or bliss or help you find your purpose or any of these things. They're all just designed to help anyone who chooses. It's just a choice. It's just a choice. Mm-hmm. But some people choose to be sick. I know we're getting close to time. There's something I want to tell you, but first, did you have any other questions you wanted me to answer? Or I'll just tell you this real quick.
Well, David, I did have a quick question. When you talk about power of thought, does that tie in with emotion? Because I've watched movies like The Secret, and I've done so much reading on metaphysics from various, you know, Wayne Dyer, and I mentioned Louise Hay, and various people. And many of them talk about, you know, you're putting yourself in the situation as if and feeling the emotion. Is that what you mean when you talk about the power of thought?
That helps. Okay, when we talk about the power of thought, basically what we're talking is how connected to infinity are you? Because if you're connected to infinity, look, if we think about thoughts, we have thoughts all day long. Excuse me, if we're awake all night long, our whole lives, we never run out of thoughts. And this is something from an introductory lecture on TM. We never run out of thoughts. And if we think about it, thoughts have two qualities about them. They are, they move, they flow. We start thinking about, you know, traffic, and all of a sudden we're thinking about, oh, this route home and that route home. It just flows. And they're intelligent. It's always, thoughts have intelligence about them. They're creative and they're intelligent. Because we have unlimited thoughts, and because everybody we know has unlimited thoughts, whatever the source of thought is, it must be unlimited in terms of its creativity and in terms of its energy, its flow, its ability to flow. So if we can be in contact with that infinite reservoir from where thoughts come, thoughts would be infinitely powerful, and whatever one thinks would be created. It would have to be. It would have no option. So emotions are a subtler level of thinking than the gross thinking level. So yes, when we tie in emotions, it is more powerful. But more powerful still is how deep, how close to infinity can we get? How much deeper can we get to add power to it? And that's what, you know, our DVDs are all about. They're silent DVDs, and they're to help you bridge that gap to get you close enough to infinity that what you desire, you can create.
Fantastic.
So there are, yeah, so good. And then reading the book, even because we clear the blocks, we clear the blocks. And as we clear them, then automatically we're closer. The illusion that we're separate from infinity only exists within us. From God's side, from infinity's side, we're one. We're good. We're good to go. But we think, oh, I'm, you know, 5'2" or 9'8" or whatever size we are, and 100 and some pounds. Or we think that's who we are. We think we begin somewhere inside and we end at the skin, and everything else is external to us. And it's all an illusion. It's absolutely an illusion. And the game is, and this is what's fun, the game is hide and seek. Can you find who you are? And that's what the book Awaken to Who You Are is all about.
Well, I have to tell you, David, it has been such a pleasure having you on the show today. I can't wait to bring you back again. And I'm also going to suggest that my Just Believe host, Lisa Tarvez, bring you on her Sunday night show, because Lisa is our metaphysical host. She covers all of these spiritual topics. And I think you would make a great guest on her program. So, once again, David, just please give out your website again, and we'll get going here, but I encourage everyone to please check out David's site, check out his book and all of his CDs and things that he has to offer there. So, David, once again, give out the name of your website, please.
Well, it's actually davidadelson.com, but that's hard to spell, so just go to Gifts from Devotion. Gifts is plural, giftsfromdevotion.com. Put /Daria and you can get, the first 50 people can get the book Awaken to Who You Are free. It's our gift to you, and we want as many people to benefit from this as possible. It's been such a delight. I would love to come back. Just let me know whenever you want me to, and I'd be happy to talk on your friend's show as well. But this has been great, and I thank you for having me, and I wish great blessings to all of your audience and to everyone everywhere. It's a fabulous world. It's an amazing creation, and we forget that. so much of the time, and it's that's why we created the video, The Miracle of Pain. You can see it on YouTube, it's free, and it's an amazing world. It's an amazing accomplishment of the divine to get us to trick ourselves to think that we're less than who we are. And it's just a great joy to appreciate that. So thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you, David. And I look forward to speaking with you soon. And blessings to
okay.
you also.
All right. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, everyone. That was the wonderful David Adelson. Let me just go ahead and spell his last name. Of course, the website you can get to, it's Gifts from Devotion, and that's plural, as in a gift that you would give to someone, giftsfromdevotion.com. His name is David Adelson. That's A-D-E-L-S-O-N. And I want to thank David again for joining me in the first hour here. Everyone, you know what's coming. Please stay tuned. We are going to take a quick break here with Madison Rising Star Spangled Banner. And then the Luminaries of Liberty will pick up the second half of Right Stream Tuesday. So stay tuned.
Igor. Dude, the show's starting.
Welcome to another edition of The Right Wing Riot with your hosts, the scary smart Jamie K. Wilson.
Every morning when I get late, should I go in and report to my boss?
The mysterious and alluring Ms. Always Right.
Do we think that this is going to start being as obviously stupid to everyone as it is to us?
And Griff Griffiths, who is the Prince of Whiteness. Let's get this riot started!
The Prince of White Bread is here. Apparently we have the NSA guys. They turned something on or off incorrectly. Let's see. We still hear that.
They have always been jealous of our show.
They have. Wait. Okay. I guess they're listening closely because it sounds like that annoying sound is gone. Well, welcome to another edition of the Right Wing Riot.
Thank you.
With your previously announced peeps, hosts, and generally cool people. Cool people, anything cool to bring us up to date on before we leap right into it?
Nah.
Probably not.
Okay, so we're going to keep going.
We're busy. We're not like people who get awards for nothing.
Okay.
We earn
it. You might be talking about the Hugo Awards, but that may be another episode.
Wow.
We're talking about a lot of things.
Okay, just make a note, Igor. There's a whole other show we've got to do on awards people get for that they don't deserve. Like, say, a Nobel Peace Prize to Yasser Arafat or even Barack Obama. But enough of that. Our first interesting discussion is going to be coming to us from Austin, Texas. Texas, the land of the Prince of White Bread's birth. And it's actually kind of unfair to play the yeehaw music, but that's what most people associate with Texas. This story is actually coming out of Austin, Texas, which is perhaps the bluest place in Texas.
Keep Austin weird.
Yeah, I spent a hellish 6 months in Austin once. I was subjected to enough indie music to last me several lifetimes. But I want to set the stage for you here. We had some unfortunate things happen in Austin. Drunk driving is a terrible thing. I actually had a friend in high school who was killed at age 17 by a drunk driver. So it's nothing to make fun of. It's a serious thing. And yet some people in Texas are apparently thinking it's not that serious. But first, here's a little audio from a sobriety test of this fine person we're talking about.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, he's just trying to keep you from tripping over. You don't need to be slapping his hands away from him. He's just trying to keep you from falling over. So you're not willing to do that either. And again, you understand that this is what I use to determine if somebody's intoxicated. You leave me with only the facts that I have, which is your erratic driving in a bike lane, crossing over, going southbound in a northbound lane of traffic, crossing over. Yes, ma'am. I've already explained that. The odor of alcohol you admit into drinking.
Do you smell alcohol? Please.
And so you that's what you leave me with for me to make my decision on, man. You understand?
I don't think you smell alcohol. And I haven't erratically drive.
Okay. Well, I believe you have, man.
Okay.
Okay.
So here we are.
Yes, ma'am, go ahead and put your hands behind your back for me.
Okay, that was 10 minutes into the field sobriety test. She hadn't erratically drived. Individual is a woman, and the police officer had spent a lot of time trying to get her to do the basic field sobriety tests. But
she
the fun
was
didn't end there.
North in a south lane?
And in the bike lane, and...
But that driving wrong way, I think we all know people have been killed by that.
A few other facts. They found an open container of vodka in this woman's car, and
But that doesn't mean it was hers.
No.
That's true. Dog drinking problems, that's a whole other show we got to do again, Igor. And also her breathalyzer was 0.28, which is over three times.
That's go to the hospital limit.
that's over three times the legal limit in Texas.
It wasn't the breathalyzer. That was the blood test taken hours later.
Oh my goodness. I misread that.
I can't believe she lived through that. Obviously a very accomplished drinker with some experience,
well,
because most people would be in the hospital.
Not to be unkind, she was a large lady. She was big boned. So she had a lot of mass
to
help.
That must have cost a lot. Wow.
It was to her advantage to metabolize all that booze, because you're right, she would have been dead in a ditch. As we said, the fun didn't end there. So here's a few, shall we say, outtakes from her experience as she's being booked and held, probably waiting for her to sober up or see if she's going to live.
Tomorrow morning, American Station is going to report that I was arrested for DWI.
I'm aware of that.
I know.
Not that.
I have not been treated fairly. You know, look at this. This is silly. Give me my phone. Give me my purse.
They're not going to give you your cell phone in here, but you will have an opportunity to visit the jail phone.
They have not even offered to call anybody for me. I would do that for an indigent person.
I understand.
And I'm a district attorney, and no one has done anything to me.
Oh, wait. Did I mention she was the district attorney in Austin, Texas?
So that is the face of law enforcement in Austin, Texas.
That is the tip of the spear, and surprisingly, this woman, and I failed to have, I'm sorry, her name is Rosemary Lindberg. She is a Democrat, and she was pulled over, tested, convicted. They've got a lot of video, which is really not fun to watch. It was pretty grueling.
Not bad.
Well, yeah, obviously this woman needs help, but...
Yeah.
Surely
she has stepped down from her position by now.
Oh, no. You err in that assumption.
But how can she have authority?
Well, these are Democrats we're talking about.
Right, you mentioned that. I'm sorry. Carry on.
Yes. Yeah, so Rick Perry, who is the Republican governor of Texas, heard about this story, and he had a somewhat similar thought, as in... District attorney, face of the law, driving drunk, could have killed somebody. He requested she step down.
Fair enough.
And she said no. And she's also, this is the best part of all, she's in charge of something called a public integrity unit.
Oh, come on.
In Texas.
Come on.
I'm sorry. This
you
is,
kid.
I kid you not. Would the Prince of White Bread lie to you?
No, you never have.
And you know I will sometime. But the head of the public integrity unit was convicted. She's at 45 days in jail for driving drunk.
Wow.
And when the governor of the state said, you probably need to step down, she said no. And the governor of the state said, you misunderstand. I'm in charge of the budget. I have a line item veto per the Texas State Constitution. And if you do not step down, I'm going to defund your unit because you're such a disgrace.
Yeah.
And
she's not fit to run that unit, yeah.
One would think. And so the governor of Texas, he has the state constitution behind him. He has the line item veto. So basically he is following the law. when he says, I'm going to use my line item veto powers to defund this particular unit because this
is headed up
person,
by a raving drunk.
Yeah, who is going to kill somebody if not worse.
Has no ethical compunction whatsoever. But.
And what do you imagine happens?
Well, you would think that she, being herself, would have declined to step down and he would veto, as is his right, and actually what he ought to be doing as governor.
Yes, but it went a little further than that because a special prosecutor out of Austin has now indicted Governor Rick Perry for abuse of power by... So,
also known as leading, I think.
Yeah, so I had to walk myself through this. The governor followed the law. He's actually following the Constitution, and the Democrats try to take him to court for following the law and the Constitution.
I am dying to know whether the special prosecutor had a relationship with the drunk lady from earlier.
Wow.
You'd think they would, right?
I would
don't
think
know.
So.
A good journalist might be trying to find that out. I do know that this special prosecutor is also a person of the blue political persuasion, which makes it very curious that they would do this. But it led me to, as I was meditating on my sins and the sins of others, it led me to this thought. What is it about Democrats and the law? They seem to have a real problem with the actual laws as they're written in the actual Constitution. There are a number of ways President Obama, President Constitutional Scholar-in-Chief, doesn't follow the law.
I have a special poem.
Okay, get close to your microphone. I want to make sure everybody can hear this.
A poem.
All right.
A poem.
Yeah, a poem. No, a poem.
Okay,
is this
poetry? Do we have to hurl ourselves off the stage while it's going on?
No, this is doggerel based on somebody else's poem. But you'll recognize it quickly.
Okay, so it's a swipe.
So, yes, this is how Obama does not follow the law. Let me count the ways. He ignores laws of depth and breadth and height. His pen can reach when feeling out of sight for the ends of every politician's race. He flouts the law to the level of every day's best golfing score. By sun and streetlight, he flouts it freely as we strive for light. He flouts it purely though we work to shame. He ignores law with a passion put to use of old grievances and with his party's faith. He tramples it with vigor he seems to gain with each protestation. He stomps the law with a breath, smiles, tears of all his heart. And if he so chose, he would but flout it more when told he's wrong.
Wow.
Beautiful.
So, a love poem to Obama's illegality.
I'm not sure it would count as a love poem.
Well,
where
there was some
from?
Passion there. Yeah.
Who authored that?
Elizabeth Barrett Browning. That was Elizabeth Barrett Browning, Let Me Count the Ways. Except I put my own little twist on it.
You put the twist on it. Okay, I'm just wondering.
Yeah, a little bit.
Very nice.
She was very prescient as a poet, but she didn't quite make it this far.
No.
So we'll put that up on the Right Wing Riot website.
Oh, okay.
Is that up?
If you really want to. It will be soon.
Oh,
was I making a pointed observation or anything? No, not me.
No one has
anything
else to do.
The Right Wing Riot website will be up soon. It will be chock full of goodies for all seven of our listeners over at the NSA because I heard that they've actually got the janitor listening now. He finds it very soothing to listen to us as he's buffing the floors with that big rotary thing.
Sure.
I like janitors. They actually do work.
Yep.
And you can see it. If the janitor was there or not.
That's right.
There are all the many ways Obama doesn't follow the law. Eric Holder's Justice Department is rather notorious for picking and choosing what part of the law it's going to follow, even when the court has said things like, voter ID laws are not inherently racist. Eric Holder just moves on ahead and keeps harassing states over their voter ID laws.
That guy gives me a pain in the ass. I am just about done with him. I will tell you. What the hell?
What about the hemorrhoid? That's him. Yeah.
Oh, what a creep. Anyway, carry on. Just saying.
Okay. Yeah. So
I mean, we could go for days just talking about
I reined
and
it
we
in.
Wouldn't even have to, and we wouldn't have to go into detail. We just list.
Oh,
God. That's true. It would make a boring show. But when you're thinking about during the day, the rest of the week as you're driving along or you're spying on other people's emails, you guys at the NSA, listening in on phone calls, just think about all the ways that the Democrats, I'm not going to say Democrat believers, but at least the Democratic politicians, all the ways they seem to have a problem with the law and the Constitution. It's really remarkable.
Yeah. I like the way they get themselves into the position to actually, what's the word I'm looking for, to actually be in charge of enforcing the law, too. That's like the greatest irony.
That brings to mind the wisdom of Uncle Joe Stalin, who said it doesn't matter who votes, it matters who counts the votes. It's somewhat similar to me.
It's almost like they've been listening to him or something. I mean, who would do that?
No.
Obviously, the guy. Like,
no.
Yeah. I mean, the guy's dead. He had only one good arm, you know? It's,
yeah. True. His left arm.
He had a great mustache.
He had a porn stash before porn stashes were cool, didn't he?
Yeah.
This is true.
Proletariat porn, right here, right now. But speaking of confidence, that brings us to the Obama administration. Because, you know, President Obama was a constitutional scholar. He was going to bring hope and change. He's bringing light. He's going to stop the rise of the ocean. He's going to stop the glaciers from melting. He's probably going to stop the heartbreak of psoriasis, but he hadn't mentioned that because he ran out of time.
That's for the third term.
But one of the things that was promised to us by all of his supporters was confidence, transparency, and competence. Mostly the confidence because he ran a great political election campaign. I think, which is like saying the guy who waxes your car is an automotive engineer because he does a good job.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Ms. Always Right has a little something for us on the depth, the breadth, the stunning commitment to competence that we find in the Obama administration.
Yes. Well, as anyone who is running an organization knows, when you wish to hire competent people, you look at their resume and you try to find somebody with a breadth of experience in the field for which you're hiring them. I mean, that's what people with experience in the business world do. So obviously it's not going to be what the Obama administration does. I would like to give a shout-out to the American Thinker, AmericanThinker.com. Their blog, they've just been doing great work keeping an eye on the personnel issues. And every now and then they'll go ahead and highlight one of Obama's senior advisors and just give a nod to the extensive background of experience that these people have coming into these jobs. It's really breathtaking stuff.
Does it give you a great sense of confidence knowing that the vetting process was so deep and thorough and exhaustive?
Correct. I mean, clearly these are people who are striving to staff their administration with the most competent people that they can find. Competence is obviously at the top of their list in qualifications.
Political loyalty. What's that, Scary Smart?
People at the very, very top of their field.
Correct.
Top men, as they said in Indiana Jones. Top men with no partisanship. I mean, you know, politics, all politics aside, they want the best person for the job because
Correct.
They take these jobs seriously. That would be a fair assessment.
For sure. I mean, obviously these are great patriots who understand the weight of the responsibility they have running the government for the greatest country on earth, and they give this the gravity that the situation deserves. As you say, the people they hire in the top of their field when they are hired. Unfortunately, their field generally has little or nothing to do with the job that they've been hired for, but they were actually very good at what they were doing, apparently, before they were hired into these positions. And
Do tell.
Yes. Sure. Just most recently, the American Thinker was highlighting Anita Breckinridge, who is a top advisor, top-ranking advisor to President Obama. She's helicoptering back and forth to Martha's Vineyard with him while he vacations.
What is her field of advisement?
She is his top-ranking advisor. Not sure in exactly which field. She seems to run all kinds of things right now. According to this article, she decides when to interrupt the president with updates on emerging problems, like what's going on in Iraq, what's going on in Missouri. She schedules meetings for him, decides which ones are important. And she's, at this point, I think 36 years old. Very, very important woman and pretty much running the show while he vacations. And she was originally at the top of her field when he met her. She was doing an excellent, excellent job driving him around in a car. So fabulous experience this woman has.
So
she's deputy chief of staff.
Is she deputy chief?
Deputy chief of staff, yeah.
Good grief.
Deputy chief of staff. So, deputy makes me.
Beg pardon?
I think Gary Smart was just gang rushed by the SWAT team.
Oh, no. Did they get her? No.
They found her.
Gary, talk to us.
She's been carried away.
Sorry?
Now the NSA is blocking cell phone communications. Well, we'll carry on as best we can.
Yeah.
And she forgot to wear her tinfoil hat to protect her from these things.
Well, that's how they were able to find her, probably.
Apparently. So the deputy, she said, the deputy director of staff?
Yeah, deputy, that's what she said before she was hushed. Yeah. And described as his top-ranking advisor with him currently while he is on vacation in the vineyard. Initially, she has known Obama since 2003 when he was campaigning for his Senate seat, and she used to drive him around.
And what is this? Surely this woman has an educational background in international politics, economics, finance, perhaps at a German university.
You would think, yeah. No, she actually worked her way up through the ranks, as have so many senior advisors and cabinet members in the Obama administration. Now, again, reverting to the private sector business model, this is actually a good thing to do. You start in the mailroom, for instance, or in the delivery truck, and you work your way up through a company. And this way you learn each facet of the business so that by the time you get to the upper levels, you've been everything in the company, and you know what you're talking about when you make decisions. So for private sector, sorry?
In this case, what is the business in this case?
Well, unfortunately, the business in this case is bureaucracy, and this is not something that you want to learn inside out on your way up.
No.
So I don't think this is a good model for the public sector at all, but when it's all you know.
I think it's also political cronyism.
Oh, you think?
I think we can call it the business of political cronyism. You know,
I think
you've got to learn. Got to learn whose butts to kiss and whose shoes to buff and stuff like that.
For sure. It pretty much amounts to him looking around at the peons and going, I like you. I mean, that's the qualification, you know? I like you. You're nice to me.
All the humanity and all the passengers.
Those are the qualifications.
That seems like, of course, I'm not the smartest president who's ever been elected, and I'm not bringing light to anybody, but it seems to me like it's a really poor model for staffing, perhaps even a poor model for, having people with insight who may actually know what they're talking about, other than just parroting back what they've been told.
Yeah, no, he has stuck with this model because it works so well for him. I believe when he was running for president, he was able to recruit another driver who eventually became a National Security Council spokesman, Tommy Veeder, whatever his name was. So he also was a highly qualified driver, I believe. Veeder, however you say that name.
Oh, I didn't know that. Jamie, do you have any more on that?
Not right now, but, yeah, I mean, it's just par for the course. He doesn't want to be challenged. He wants to feel comfortable. because you see the most important qualification for any president is that he's always happy and comfortable and never bothered with anything. When those pesky issues come up, those pesky problems come along, he lets other people take care of those.
Yeah, yeah. Well, his other highly qualified staff members, yeah.
Well, yeah, and his inner circle. His inner circle is tasked with keeping him comfortable all the time.
That's how you get there, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It is a kind of sad. I believe in the first his first term, I remember reading that the total percentage of cabinet and staff members that had any private sector experience in the Obama administration was about 7%, which is amazing. So what utter contempt for the private sector and people who actually do something useful, you know, who actually make
like
the
janitors.
Money rather than take.
Right.
Yeah, janitors, for instance. Anyone, veterinarians, hot dog stand guys, everybody.
Radio show people. Yes, all those
hardworking radio
individual.
Show people. Yeah.
This is work.
Yeah.
You know what? I never realized before that we actually have to put work into our dopey radio show even. Everything takes a bit of work.
Okay.
Well, and also what I see is, the obvious problem with people who have no business experience is they really they have no understanding of and no empathy for the kinds of things that a business person, a producer, an actual generator of product or services would actually go through and the kind of challenges they would face. It'd be like, I don't know, just taking me and making me the head of the Black Panthers. I'd lack a certain background.
The Prince of white bread.
I could have a Black Panther name.
Well,
they call me
convert.
LLMBT. Yeah, that would be
really
ladies
good.
Love my big personality, but that's another story. But
you're right.
So
it is
making
easy
me
to
the head of the but making me the head of the Black Panthers sounds like about as useful as making somebody who's a driver part of your national security apparatus.
Hey, no, in his defense, Tommy Veeder actually drove a van, okay, not just a car, all right? So I'm impressed. I don't know about you.
Having driven a van.
Sorry?
I said, having driven a van, I'm not that impressed, to be honest.
Oh, I see. You know,
what kind of van are we talking here? Are we talking like an ordinary, like, soccer mom van, or are we talking a 15-passenger van?
I don't have that information at my fingertips. I'm sorry. I can research it for you, though. That's an important distinction.
If it's not a 15-passenger van, I don't care, because I drive a 15-passenger van all the time.
Well, that's good news. I think that you should be next in line for National Security Advisor.
Ooh,
you're highly qualified.
That's lucrative, too.
In a related note, later today I'm going to perform some eye surgeries, because why not?
Okay.
All right.
I'm glad I didn't go to you guys by vasectomy. That's really all I have to say about that.
Actually, I did two of those yesterday, and they came out okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't think those guys are going to be procreating. Let's just put it that way.
Oh, wow. Always right.
Exactly.
Wow. Always in the right spot when it comes to surgery. Good. That's good to know. Wow, goodness, I'm feeling better, so much better. And I just feel safer now, knowing that these highly qualified, experienced, and, you know, I got to say, I'd even settle for educated people in the area, even though a lot of educated people don't know that much. I imagine they might know a little
overrated.
More than the drivers, yes. But speaking of other things that are unfortunate, there are a bunch of riots. I haven't seen the current approved euphemism. I think it's something like disadvantaged youths speaking truth to power through the people's
protesting.
Redistribution. Yes, the protesters. The protesters in Ferguson who are protesting through windows and into stores and then back out with their arms
very
full.
Hard, yeah.
Yeah,
very hard.
It
works up an appetite.
It does. It's
gotta,
protesting
gotta
like that.
Gym.
It's
I would
both
like to
hard and dangerous.
I'd like to distinguish that these are not right-wing riots. These are a different kind of riot altogether, because right-wing riots are law-abiding riots.
Yes.
I just
we
to
clean up
that.
After ourselves.
Correct.
Yes.
So it's a different kind of riot altogether. I just don't want to get lumped in with Ferguson rioting or that kind of, or Al Sharpton riots, okay? We are right-wing rioters. We're a whole different ball of wax.
Wow.
We are law-abiding as the law is written right now.
Indeed.
We'll see what Eric Holder says later.
Yeah, Eric Holder will let us know which of those laws he's going to be trampling on.
Yeah.
Correct. But for now.
Yeah. Yes. Well,
But
carry on.
So, the riots were started through the unfortunate shooting of a young man. Always terrible. Someone's family's grieving. We don't know all the story, but there's certainly a lot of stuff being said about it, and our usual bearers of light and peace and harmony, that would be Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, have been doing their level best to level Ferguson. but it seems, and tell me what you think about this, girls, that if the news were being reported a tad more fairly, we might have a different situation in Ferguson.
Like if they reported the facts and waited until they actually had facts?
That's a radical concept, but I'm going to go with it. Yes,
yeah.
if the news had actually waited to report the facts and
so
waited until they had actual facts.
The media should be reporting truth and facts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's weird. That's really weird.
Yeah, it's a strange idea. And then and I'm going to go, I'm just going to put it all on the table right now. Call me wacky. Call me crazy.
Okay.
Call me a conservative nut job. But if perhaps the White House would stop meddling, maybe,
you know,
just
this morning noticing that these riots flare up periodically, and there generally seems to be a Democrat in the White House when they do. There were the 68 ones, which resulted in getting rid of the Democrat in the White House. There were the ones in the 90s where we had the Clinton White House. And here we are in the post-racial presidency of Democrat Barack Obama, and here we go again.
Interesting.
What's that pattern there?
I don't know.
So perhaps there's an explanation for the inability of the news organization to tell a story straight based on, as Joe Friday might say, on just the facts.
The truth.
The truth.
Wow. Like,
that would be something.
Yeah, we're all just kind of stunned at this very novel idea of the guy telling the truth.
Yeah,
well,
it would
it's a
dream.
It's a terrible story in many ways, and people are being hurt and livelihoods destroyed, a lot of things are being destroyed, including the truth.
It's almost a fairy tale, the truth is these days, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like I've heard of once, but it doesn't really exist anymore.
Yeah, it's...
What has happened
I don't know.
To it?
Let's soothe our souls.
It's time for another fable from the big book of comforting fairy tales for delicate liberals.
And today, we're going to hear a story called The Truth Fairy, read for you by Aunt Scary Smart.
That's right. Okay, everyone, are you ready? Once upon a time, there was a reporter. Perhaps his name was Stephen, or maybe it was Chris, or maybe it was even Ezra. But his name doesn't matter. This reporter had a terrible toothache.
What's a toothache?
Well, pajama boy, a toothache is when the truth you know is right and good doesn't quite fit the so-called facts. It's an uncomfortable feeling, especially if you have a conscience. Anyway, this reporter's toothache started when he first tried to twist the truth a bit, just a bit, to fit what he knew what was right. Something broke, and the truth had been painful ever since. He sometimes wiggled the truth with his tongue, wondering if he would feel right having it gone. But other reporters got used to missing truth, so he supposed losing his might not be so bad.
He was sitting at his computer one night worrying at the truth instead of working on an important national story when something scratched at one of the windows overlooking 43rd Street. No one, not even pigeons, should be out there at this time of night. He looked and jumped back with a squeak.
What was it?
Well, you'll see in a second. The oddest creature was clicking long, talon-like nails on the window, iron gray hair framed, withered skin stretched loosely over a face with a drooping nose and heavy chin.
Oh, that's scary to me.
A delicate ermine scarf, nothing for the peanut gallery, please, separated that face from the rest of her very old lady body. Most surprising were the gossamer, somewhat gray and dingy wings that sprouted from her back, glistening in the faint city light. She motioned for him to open the window. He looked for a latch, then remembered that skyscraper windows rarely opened, so he motioned at the edges and shrugged. Her face contorted into, he thought, a frown of intense concentration, and she waved a wand that looked just like an antique typewriter platen. The glass shimmered and she floated forward. The glass stretched around her like saran wrap, and then with a pop, she was through. It closed behind her. That's better. The truth will always in. I think you mean the truth will out, he could not help saying. He tilted his head. Pardon, but what are you? Her face contorted a different way, and after a moment, he realized she was giving him a reassuring smile. Oh, dearie, you can call me Helen. I'm the truth fairy. I don't believe in the tooth fairy. She rapped his knuckles with a sparkly platen. No, no, the truth fairy. I collect truth. Beg pardon? She leaned forward conspiratorially. The truth hurts, doesn't it, dearie? All painful and lodged in there between what you know and what you want to say. I'm here to take that away for you.
So she's a good fairy. She gets rid of the things that hurt our society's advancement.
That's right, Pajama Boy. Very good. The reporter blinked. The neglected tooth twinged in his mouth, and unconsciously he wiggled it with his tongue. What? Just sit down in that chair. No, no, not your chair, the editorial chair, the one in your boss's office. And let me take care of it for you. He almost protested, but stopped. The truth was very troublesome. Without it, his words would come out more smoothly, without conflict, painlessly and freely. Before he knew it, he was leaning back in Finch's perfectly balanced chair, the buttery leather embracing his body, and the horrible creature was leaning over him, pretending to hold something. This isn't pretend, it's an invisible fold. Open your mouth. I'll just wrap it around here like this. Her fingers smelled faintly of hard candy and nicotine. She wrapped a surprisingly thick cord around his painful truth. The other end went around the sparkling platen, which she took and set in the air as if placing it in an invisible typewriter. It hovered there. Ow, he asked, not daring to move his lips. Now, think about the story you were trying to write. Glancing nervously toward her, he thought hard. The innocent black boy shot by a liquor store owner. It was a big story. He knew it. If he could just shape it right. As he thought, the fairy sat in an invisible chair before the floating platen, typing on invisible keys that made a very real clack-clack. Sound he remembered from old-fashioned manual typewriters. She was fast, and the rhythm lulled him, and his thoughts clarified. It was clear now. The boy's police record. Racist, of course. The system was stacked against him, so it didn't count and shouldn't be mentioned. The bottle he was carrying, that wasn't a 40-ounce of Old English 800. That was grape juice. Probably for his church. Hadn't he heard that Stone probably had a Klan hood and a shotgun under his cash register? The boy had been 18 and a linebacker, but he looked just like the impish child in the elementary school pictures his weeping mama held on the news conference just this morning. If he has that phone number, this, he thought, is human interest, not crime.
Ooh, Aunt Scary Smart. The fairy is helping the reporter see what's really important.
That's right, Pajama Boy. Maybe someday you can be smart. Never mind. Meanwhile, the fairy grumbled to herself, muttering as the platen reached the end of the line. She swept it back with a quick practice motion. The reporter felt a sudden pain. Something swept from his mouth. The troublesome truth was gone. I'll just take this away for you, she grimaced her smile at him again as she wound up her invisible cord. I don't think you'll be troubled by it again. The reporter wiggled his jaw experimentally, his tongue automatically going to the empty space left by the truth. It felt right to him somehow, as if that was how it should have been all along. The words to the news piece he had been writing swept into his mind, flowing effortlessly, saying exactly what he had wanted to say all along. He smiled. Now he'd be able to tell his readers what they needed to hear, without that troublesome truth getting in the way. "Aren't you supposed to leave a little something when you take away the truth?" he asked as she collected her platen and turned to leave. She looked over one shoulder. "Oh, I did, dearie, I did." And there it was on his desk, the Pulitzer Prize he'd always wanted, and all it had cost him was losing the truth.
"Aunt Scary Smart, this is so good. It's the best fairy tale I've ever heard. I want to send it to Dear Leader."
"Oh, Pajama Boy, I'm pretty sure he's been visited by the truth fairy quite a few times in his life. Time for bed now." Did you tuck him in, Chris?
That was amazing. That was
just tucked
fantastic.
In now.
I feel so relaxed.
Pajama Boy's tucked in. He's asleep, but he is counting on you to send that to Dear Leader, just like you said.
Oh, of course I will.
Oh, my God. Oh, how do you guys do this?
It's natural.
It's amazing.
It is.
Pajama Boy. That is the best thing ever, that voice. That is the best. Please me. I was trying to be quiet, but he cracks me up. I couldn't help it.
Okay, now wait a minute. We can't talk too much about Pajama Boy.
Why?
Well.
We don't want to get it.
You know, people look at elephants, they see a very large, gray, lumpy creature. They don't realize they have feelings, too. And you know, Igor, he just feels bad about some of these things.
Oh, large, gray, and lumpy. Let me specify, Igor does not have gossamer wings.
He does not.
No.
No, he doesn't
we
look
trust
anything
Igor.
Like that one.
In fact...
tickling the ivories.
He is. No, we don't say the I word here.
I was wondering why that didn't bother him at some point.
Oh, no. Igor, now, put down the piano. It's okay. He didn't mean it.
Thank God I'm not in the studio with you guys. This is why I call in remote.
Okay, he was just putting it down. He just wanted to let you know he could if he wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
We know.
We have some time for an unscheduled segment. Do you ladies feel like leaping into that secret unscheduled segment?
We can give it a shot. I don't know how it'll come out, but we can try.
It could be certainly as sterling as the rest of the show has been. But first, Igor has to find the musical intro. Igor, you ready? He's giving me the silent countdown. It's really hard without fingers. Now the trunk is waving in the air. almost. And I think that's it. It's time for a special segment here on the Right Wing Riot. There's a new, exciting satiric strip on the net. It is called Truesberry. And today, we are going to interview the creators of the Truesberry strip.
Awesome.
I think we'll start.
Well,
let's see. Let me put on a serious voice. I gotta put my NPR hat on. Let's see if I can do it. Well, welcome to today's show. Thank you for joining us as we sit we sit here quietly with the creators of the satiric and likely copyright infringing Shrewsbury strip.
you sound very impressive. I think our credibility has just gone way up once you put that voice on.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know how much longer I can keep up. So let's start with Scary Smart. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Shrewsbury and where people can find it? What is Shrewsbury? What is it to me? How will my life be better by knowing about Shrewsbury, Ms. Scary Smart?
How will your life be better? In every way imaginable, of course. Everything from your career to your sex life, everything will be better if you just read Shrewsbury every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and then occasionally a special day.
I'm typing right now.
There you go. Shrewsbury is a lovely brainchild of, oh, my gosh, the right-wing red.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? It comes right around in a beautiful circle. We don't have to crowd the room too much for this. But it was actually not my brainchild. It was the brainchild of our mighty prince, mm-hmm. who was one day reading Shrewsbury and thought, oh, my God, this is exactly what's happening today. So he's kind of rewritten it a little bit. Just a little.
And in what way have we been rewriting these, Ms. Always Right?
Well, to make them pertinent to today's news. Oh, I'm sorry. You go ahead, right.
Scary Dart, is your name always right?
No.
No.
You're always right. I'm only smart.
But you're mostly scary, if we get right down to it. Tell us a little more there, Ms. Always Right. Tell us a little more about Shrewsbury.
Yes, well, as our brave and brilliant prince realized, it fits more today than ever when you look at what is going on with our illustrious leadership. And so the funny thing that you can do is just change a name here and there, and it totally applies to today's situation. And it's funny to do that because it underscores the partisanship and hypocrisy of the people who create and print and distribute material like Shrewsbury. So when it's not their guy in the White House, they're going to go for it. And when it is their guy in the White House, even though he's 10 times worse, they clam up. It's not funny anymore.
Well, forgive me for interrupting you, but I've known the Prince of Whitebread for a long time, and he's far less impressive than you've described.
Well,
and while we're on the subject, Shrewsbury's not that funny. There is nothing amusing about the about playing out the things that President Obama has been trying to do, and the fact that there's a certain parallel between the activities of, let's say, Richard Nixon during the Watergate hearings, in which, during the Watergate scandal, no one died, of course, but there's no parallel between the lies told there and, of course, the lies told in Benghazi. That's simply a faux news reporting story.
You're
Dude, shut
correct.
The hell up. So, we...
But true, that's actually true, because if Nixon had had the sense to hire a fiction writer to handle his talking points, he might have come out ahead on the Watergate scandal. But our president today is much smarter than Nixon, and he was smart enough while he was hiring these highly credentialed people. He hired a fiction writer to write his Benghazi talking points. So, yeah, you're right. Obama wins.
Together, and I had your right. You're exactly
Obama
right.
Obama wins. He's much smarter than we thought.
He is the smartest president ever. Well, Shrewsbury is actually a joint production of the entire right-wing riot. I had the initial idea, but it would have looked like crayon scribbles by an autistic kid who would actually have one arm tied behind his back without the amazing help of Ms. Always Right. And it's a joint effort in that somebody suggests an idea or is doubled over with laughter at the complete ineptitude of the current administration. And then they're simultaneously outraged by the tongue bath given to this current administration and their ineptitude.
I love that expression.
And one of us, sometimes all of us, happen to think, gosh, how different this would be if this was Richard Nixon or Ronald Reagan or George Bush. And a little bit of archival research turns up gosh, when Ronald Reagan was going on vacations a lot, for instance, that was a week-long series in the Doonesbury Strip. And, mm-hmm. For instance, when he did it in 1982, the unemployment rate was 9%. Now President Obama has gone on far more vacations than Ronald Reagan ever did, and at far greater expense. What was the cost? Mm-hmm. Do you remember that, Scary Smart? Is it into the $100 million for the Obama vacations?
It is well into the hundreds. Well, the Africa trip alone was $100 million.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
and then he's had how many trips so far?
That was a diplomatic thing, right?
Right.
No doubt.
Right. Yeah. That was state mm-hmm. business, yes.
It was diplomatically reported.
His mother-in-law.
Yes.
She is a highly qualified, credentialed, and competent member of that administration.
She has no doubt driven a van in her life. So we observed that when the unemployment rate was 9%, it was a horrible thing that Ronald Reagan was going on vacation, but now that the black unemployment rate, excuse me, the real unemployment rate is 18%, and I believe it's as high as 30% for black Americans. The Doonesburys, the Doonesburys of the world, the rest of the usual gang of clowns, don't seem to find it as problematic that the president is going on vacation a lot, and that in fact he was on vacation while what was happening. There's so much.
Where do you start?
Well, the ISS was, for instance, murdering Christians and Jews and other undesirables in Iraq.
Yeah.
He was on vacation. And
beheading babies. Let's go there.
Yeah,
beheading babies.
ISIS was beheading babies. He was on the golf course.
Right. Well, we could rant about this a long time, but that's essentially the idea behind Shrewsbury, is the mad geniuses at the Right Wing Riot find old liberal beloved strips and simply apply them to the day.
Can I just say how very telling it is that Trudeau officially retired this past year, too? Obviously he has to, because how long can you ignore the parallels, you know?
Well, a lot of people have a great ignoring power, I would say.
Mm-hmm. I don't think he could take it anymore.
I suppose. The truth fairy may have visited him. We don't know. But the important thing that's really important to acknowledge, it really is a group effort by all three of us. And in fact, some of our most retweeted, most insta-lanched strips have actually been done by Scary Smart or Ms. Always Right, who take some of my fumbling ideas and they make them so much better.
Thank God you come up with those ideas in the first place, because it doesn't occur to me. So
it is.
It wouldn't happen without you. Yeah,
I suppose.
For sure.
But,
well, can I just say how much fun I have doing? Sorry. What were you saying?
No, I just said it's a team effort.
It really is. And right now, if you Google Shrewsbury, that's Truesbury, that'll bring up a link. We're working on, it will be hosted on the Right Wing Riot webpage soon, and there is a strong possibility it will be appearing soon on another website whose name will remain confidential for now until they send us some money.
I
get
off dreaming.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dreaming can make you mine. Yeah. I'm kidding.
Now we have the musical stylings of Ms. Always Right. Actually, Ms. Always Right was in a band. We've got to get one of your MP3s up someday.
Oh, dear God. No.
What? Wait, what?
Ms. Always Right
really
was,
hard.
You know, she's mysterious, alluring, and musical.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I had no idea.
Yeah, and they used to make me sing because we could not get a singer, and so I had to sing. So that can give you a clue about the level of the quality of music you can expect. But
better than mine.
Fun.
Better than mine.
I don't know. I think you did a great job reading to a pajama boy. I thought your voice was beautiful.
You can read, but that doesn't mean you can sing.
No.
Skipped me and my family.
I'd like to think we're all family here at the Right Wing Riot.
Oh, yeah.
Do
you sing?
Do I sing?
Yeah.
Yeah, do you sing?
I was just going to say, we've all heard Igor sing.
Yes.
He only knows one song, though.
Well, I told you about my band.
Which one?
No.
I had a band in college. We were the Rhythm Dyslexics.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Wow.
But we broke up because nobody showed up on time for rehearsal.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what happens. Especially if you have donors in your band. Okay.
Well, we're about out of time for the day. We appreciate everybody joining us. Ms. Gary Smart, anything you want to add before we dance off into the ether?
Just that we should have noted that when Truesbury does come out in our special undisclosed place, it's going to be a very special Truesbury.
That's right. This is true, as it were.
Yes. And a lot that one everybody worked really hard on, and the subpoenas can be delivered. You guys know, right here to the studio. We'll our crack legal team will be all over that.
That'd be Igor, right?
That would be Igor. He'll be working in the back alley, waiting for the lawyers to walk by. He's going to whack them with his mighty trunk.
Yeah,
right?
He'll follow them all in the trunk.
Let's see. And if you do happen to stop by the Truesbury site and you enjoy it, please subscribe. We send out a newsletter 3 times a week with the current Truesbury strip and the odd bit of snark and merriment and frivolity.
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Always Right, anything going on with you?
No, I've just enjoyed hanging out with you guys as always. You take everything that's crappy out there and make it funny, and I appreciate that. Thank you for your public service.
Well, it is public service satire. That is our motto.
Yeah, you're performing a very important service. Yeah, people could get really bummed out right now if we weren't laughing at these clowns. So.
That's true.
It is. I suppose I have something to say. No, I have nothing to say, actually. Although my book is supposed to be coming out in October, we'll talk more about that when it
actually
happens.
Boy, are we
going
to have a special
happened.
Episode. Yeah, we're going to have a special launch episode.
I'll have a one-hour reading. How's that? I'll just read from the book. And a French
we can
accent.
Have a virtual book signing.
Indeed. That sounds terrific.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, we'll have people call in with questions like us. We'll write some really funny ones ahead of time. Yeah, that'll be fun.
Okay.
Yeah,
let's see. All right. So we will be back next week. And Igor, he's waving at me. I don't understand elephant trunk. I'm trying to figure it out. He's
I think
saying,
he wants you to wrap it up.
I think he's saying tie for lunch. Okay, so is that right? Okay, so it's tie for lunch. And thank you for joining us, and we will be back next week.
Bye, everyone.
See you later.
We're out of time for today's Riot. You can find us on the web at rightwingriot.com. No hyphen, all one word. Right Wing Riot. Thanks to our generous internet radio host, Daria Ann DiGiovanni.